Were you
44 years?
Were you members of a union there? Or?
When we went first, we joined a union. As I say, there was a gang of younger. There was a number of younger lads, 18, 20 year olds. They had started. What did they call it? Where Gough Casey had all the standards on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was bones. They used to calculate bones. But there was a number there, and we joined the union because we were dissatisfied with the pay. We had £2 a week, and we got a rise of half a crown, and we weren't too happy. So we said we were going on strike, and we had arguments or something, so it was brought up to £2 and 5 shillings. So. But that was, I don't know, that fella Sunder too, I can't remember why. But I wasn't a member of a union then for 30 years, I suppose, you know. Last couple of years when things were going very mad and there was all sorts of whiffing and button, we joined the union to have somebody to speak for us, like, you know.
Were you in the union during the strike?
We weren't in the union. No, I wasn't in the union in the strike, although some people were on lower levels. But the strike committee said for us to stay in work, or stay in because the company would have to pay us. Therefore, that was hurting the company. Do you know what I mean? We done nothing. We were there for 6 weeks or something. We cut grass and pull weeds and all that sort of just to keep ourselves amused.
Wasn't that amazing? So you weren't there, Catherine, during the strike?
No, I wasn't there during the strike at all. I came in 1969. And now, I remember as a student in Cork, hearing on the radio, the strike in Clontarf pavements is still going on. The strike in Clontarf pavements is still going on. And, you know, being interested because it was the longest strike. And then couldn't believe when I got the job there. But, I mean, there was a little residual bitterness. There was now. But it was... It still was mild, you know. I mean, considering it was such a long strike and such a bitter strike. Thank God it was grand afterwards. And I wasn't there then very long, and there was a strike. So I was only there about a year at the most. But it was the ESB unions, technical unions, had called out all the technical unions, 70, 71 maybe, and... us being kind of inside and no heat, we had no electricians and no... I mean, there were electricians, there were plumbers, fitters, there were, you know, a lot of technical unions, and they were all called out by the ESB in those days. But it was a different strike, ESB, because it was nothing...
By the ESB.
It was the same unions,
the electrical trade unions called them out,
yeah.
That was a national strike.
Oh, it was.
Was there almost a militant atmosphere in the air? Because we are talking about the late 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. when that long strike...
The long strike was local. That was Clondalkin paper mills. But the other one was a national strike.
Yeah.
But there was a very strong militant.
There was
the unions were very, very
strong. They were
strong.
They were strong.
They were strong.
So there was this standoff, you know, between the management and the unions. Mm-hmm. Who do you blame?
I don't blame anybody. I knew it from all sides, so...
Yeah, when you did, that's why I'm asking you, because you were there and you knew it from all sides. Mm-hmm. So who was to fault for the strike being out there so long?
How do you say you shouldn't go on strike because of something and such? Like, who do you support? Do you support the employer? It's normally two-way street, you know.
What was it all about?
Salaries.
Wait. No. The big strike was about the four shift. The big strike was about trying to introduce the four-shift operation, and the workers didn't want it. And in the it was granted in principle.
It was salaries, like, it was money involved, that's why they didn't want it.
No, they didn't want the four-shift anyway, Donald, I don't think.
No, it was, came in anyway, like, you know.
It did, but they didn't implement it for years. Mm-hmm. But that was the big bugbear of it, the four-shift operation.
But anybody who worked in the mills always said that they did well. They got a good wage.
Oh, yes.
Oh, and so why did you want more then? Sorry for asking.
You'd have to ask them.
You'd ask the unions.
You have to ask unions.
It was unions flexing their muscle too. The unions were strong and they were...
They looked for more and more like kids. And it came sort of to some point when the management said, no more. And that's it. And there's the clash. Now, who do you blame?
Maybe there was more there. Maybe there wasn't.
Who do you blame?
And I mean, in a recession time like this, the employers are going to flex their muscle because they know they can get away with it. There are people queuing up for jobs. In the other sort of time, the unions could, because they knew the order books were full. And then, therefore, they... were cutting the employer's throat a bit by threatening you. I mean, it's human nature. Yeah. And there's rights on both sides and wrongs.
Mm. Yes, it's an interesting one because you started your time as a clerk working for one of the unions. Mm-hmm.
So different. That was railwaymen.
Yeah, but it was still a union.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Okay. I'm only interested in the nuts and bolts of it, and you know the mechanics of trying to get that, you know, to get a kind of a meeting together, get people together to compromise. And there wasn't a compromising.
Well, you take any strike. That strike that happened last year, the same thing. There's a clash. The people disagree, and there's. Goes on and then something happens and there's a little bit of give and take and somebody gets in the middle in the long run. And
Yeah,
you know.
You had a young...
That's union. Yes. That's union employees' problems. That goes on all the time. Has been going on since Adam and Eve, for God's sake. And it'll go on for another 1,000 years.
Can we talk about the way that the place closed. I mean, you were there. Were you there right up to the end? Did you see the writing in the wall that, you know, this is definitely going to happen?
It was gone down for some few years.
Managed to close it at the end. It was to close it.
The mill was in the wrong place. Anyway.
It was, yeah.
Completely that wrong place. You shouldn't have a paper mill stuck in the middle of a village. It's water and all the problems of what we were talking about. Like, you know, it was all right when it was small at the village, but with houses built all around Sundalka. Everything and pollution and smells and waste paper blowing around, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's a completely wrong area, but...
But at the same time, I mean...
But, like...
You were talking... You said they cannot keep going. Whatever they are doing... They are not trying to run it to succeed.
No, no.
You did, Don. You'd come over on a Thursday night and they'd ring and the production had to be changed. And you'd say, if there was no profitability in what they were doing.
No, but they couldn't make profit. They couldn't make...
Compete. No, I know.
They
that
couldn't
was the...
compete with the big, massive big mills in Scandinavian places.
No,
like that,
they
and Canada.
But they certainly...
Huge machines.
The directors and the management didn't... say we will phase out because they ran it badly at the end. Really, really badly. You just come home.
That's handy. That's handy enough to say, you know.
When it finally sold for £1,
the government sold it.
But then the company who took it over only lasted a short time.
That's right, yeah.
Were you there then?
Yeah.
And what went wrong?
Couldn't make money.
Was it the wrong crowd that bought it?
They probably had enough money, really.
Whoever, they bought it, I don't know who, but who else would have, nobody else was looking for it. They bought it.
And we're very glad to get them come in, But the gas thing is, we were at a Christmas party on the 18th of December, was it? When Don was back working for Leinster Pavements. Great Christmas party. The lovely prizes. And look at that clock over there. There was portable tellies and things. And talking bones of the turkeys. And how many days later was that the place closed down? Oh, Jane.
Who bought it? Leinster Pavements. He was a Canadian.
Canadian, man. Wasn't
yeah.
he?
What's his name?
I don't remember his name now.
Jesus.
What was the name of the company? That
they call it Leinster Paper Mills.
Leinster.
Okay. And so, why, no. I mean, if they stayed at home and did a deal with Swarfords, who were into paper, packing, no. packaging and all that, would that have been a better deal?
No. Swarfords were very small at the place at that time.
And Swarfords were very different.
Very small.
They were very crude paper making. I mean, the dog was fine.
They were very small papers. Perfect. They were only small little place at that time.
Yeah. But was there talk around that time about, you know, somebody else who might be better? Or?
Never realistically, no.
But they probably had more sense to know that they couldn't make money at it.
Did the workforce, did you and maybe your colleagues feel that, you know, we can run this place? We'll do it ourselves.
We tried, yeah.
What happened?
We made a proposition to the government, but it wasn't accepted. We had meetings and meetings and meetings, and we pulled a proposition.
What was the proposition?
About taking the workforce, taking over the company. And
but in what capacity? You had
a nationalised business, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Are you sorry that it, you know, that?
I was sorry to see it closing, I suppose, you know.
What? Did you do anything afterwards?
Me?
Yeah.
I worked a few different jobs around.
Did you? Mm. So you didn't give up, like, you kept going?
Yeah, for a while anyway, yeah.
We kind of decided, though, we sat down and decided that I would have a better chance of getting a job. Our kids were small. So we said I would go back and do my dip. Don would look after the home front. And my teaching job would be the main job for our family. And Don O'Kay took what he got around the family. But like Don was ahead of his time in that he took on the home husband side of it in those days. But I mean, he was over in Newcastle in a school there doing maintenance there. And he did insurance for a little while. Knew he wouldn't particularly like it, but he tried it anyway for a while. But we kind of said our family, the best thing for our three kids and ourselves was to get a permanent teaching job. Now, it was a long time getting a permanent one, but I eventually did.
With who?
And that I was teaching here locally in the secondary school for 5 years, but just in a part-time. I couldn't get a permanent job. So then I got a permanent job with the Dublin County VEC, and I was in Dean's Rath for 3 years. And then a vacancy came up back here and I transferred back. So I was here in Lucan then until I retired, a secondary teacher here in Lucan.
Oh, it's a fantastic story. And when you look back, I mean, all the years, Don, that you gave to the firm. And I suppose you were there too, Catherine, in your early days. And you know, chemistry at its best.
Yeah. And it was great. And I mean, it had huge advantages for me. When I went back teaching in the VEC, I was teaching chemistry. And because I had worked in industry as a practical side of my teaching job. I was granted 5 years increments because my work in the mill was relevant to my teaching, which meant that although I had been 5 years teaching down in Lucan in a secondary voluntary school, and never got permanency. There were no jobs because Gemma Hussey had changed the pupil-teacher ratio. But when I actually got eventually permanency in the VEC, I was granted 5 years increments for my industrial experience, which was great, terrific. And I carry that with me when I went back into the secondary voluntary school. So my years in Clondalkin paper mills stood to my teaching career, which was great.
Well, Don and Catherine Dardis, thank you both very much for telling me your story.
Not at all. We didn't get your name.